The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour One Podcast.
Welcome in. It is Thursday, and the month of January is starting to slip away, but we are going to slip through your hands for the next couple of hours, and we appreciate you dropping by. Let's get to some headlines before we lose sight of reality here. And it's about the Tennessee Vols. They had the rival Gators in last night. They won the game. Close one at the end. Tennessee still alive for a really meaningful season on old Rocky Top. NIL in the news, always. It's been that way for about 7 months. This story in the CBS Sports talks about the inner workings inside the NIL. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And a new NIL company looks to make some players a little wealthier. J.B. Hunt, the big trucking company, one of the top companies in Arkansas, a Fortune 500 company, signed J.D. Notte to a new deal. All the better for the Razorbacks. John Talty, I don't know if he signed any NIL deals, but he has a book coming out in a couple of months. Dennis Dodd, he'll join us from CBS Sports inside the NIL, and Stephanie Sorensen getting us ready for some women's basketball tonight. But the calls have been the story of this week, as some of you may remember. It is always great to have you on the program at 855-242-7285, and let us begin with Dwayne, who is in Georgia. Hey, Dwayne.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Dwayne, we're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the LSU basketball team. They pulled one out last night. I think I told you this a while back. I'm blind. I don't get to watch it, but I listen to it. And lately, they've been playing some nail biters. We finally got one pulled through.
LSU's had a pretty good season. They're definitely in the running right now.
Right. Paul, one thing before you go, I wanted to let you know, Mike Leach used to call in a lot. He's a friend of mine. I found him on your show, and he called me, and we talk a lot. He's been sick lately, and he told me to let you know that he wants to watch your show, but where he's at right now, he's not able to, but he just wanted me to. I talked to him last night and just wanted me to let you know that he loves your show and can't wait to get back to watch it again.
Well, Dwayne, I know Mike fairly well, and I appreciate you passing that along, and you give him our very best, and you take care of yourself as well. It's always good to hear from you.
I'll do it. Thank you.
Be well. Mitch, up next in South Carolina. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Uncle Paul.
Hello.
I hope things are going well with you. I want to do something that I know that it's probably not necessary, but I'm going to do it anyway. I want to apologize to Jim from Tuscaloosa. I want to end the little war of words between he and I. I don't have time for it.
Well, Mitch, I don't mean to jump in the middle of some negotiations here, but you're certainly in an apologetic mood these days. I mean, you're the one who poured gasoline on Jim every time you can.
And so I'm all of a sudden, Paul.
Well, but Mitch, I mean, this is not the PTA meeting here where you just walk in with a glass of iced
so
tea.
So you want me to be angry?
I don't really care, frankly. But I find your if you would allow me to be a judge and jury here, I find your apology to be rather disingenuous.
Why?
Well, let's think about what some of the things that you've said about Jim. You want to recall some of them for the audience who may have forgotten?
And every one of them I stand by, but I want to.
You can't stand by vitriol and hate and then decide on Thursday that you're going to apologize. That's not the way it works here.
You cut me off because I used a profane word the other day. I am the type of person that when I start running my mouth, I grew up with 140 kids. I know how to tell people off better than anybody you've got on your show.
Mitch, I'm not getting into a long telling off contest with you here, but I'm just trying to keep it real. And you don't like Jim. You've said terrible things about him. So all of a sudden,
but I don't want him to keep talking about me either. I'm never going to say another word about it.
Oh, and by the way, I'm not speaking for Jim. I'm just telling you that I don't, just walking in here, waving the flag, saying kumbaya, that's to me very insincere. I'd rather you hate the guy than to offer a fake apology. Are you sincere about sitting down with Jim at the table of brotherhood and really working through your problem?
I have offered to before and never have got a response.
Well, I tell you what, I will say no more, and I'll allow Jim to be the arbiter of your apology.
I take it you enjoy, he must be paid by y'all.
He's not paid, no, Mitch Bulletin, nobody's paid by us. Nobody gets paid.
Well, he gets to come on 55,000 times a day.
There you go.
Mitch,
I mean, a minute ago you were apologizing, and now you're back to throwing,
rocks
at the poor guy. I mean, you're turning Jim into a victim here. Do you realize that?
You're kissing Jim's butt because he makes your show look like it's Valley of the Dolls.
I'm not doing anything but being honest. That's all.
I don't know that I even understand who you are. Maybe I mistook your show for something that it was.
What did you think the show
was? Have a good day.
Okay, wow. Man. Let me see if I can get my nose back after having the door slammed in it. What is this show about? I guess is the better question. Mel is up next in Florida. Hey, Mel.
Hey, Paul. Happy Thursday.
Hey there. Good afternoon.
I was watching one of the networks this morning, and I was didn't realize it, but today is Holocaust Remembrance Day.
It sure is. Absolutely.
And the story was focused on Ernie Grunfeld, the great Tennessee basketball player and NBA player, whose parents are the only surviving Holocaust. The parents of a NBA player are the only surviving Holocaust players of an NBA player in history. And I thought that was extremely interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, in fact, we had Ernie's son on a couple of
weeks ago. Yeah, he was talking about they were interviewing him about his book.
Yeah, Dan Grunfeld, and you're absolutely right. I've had the opportunity to meet Ernie's parents a number of times when I was a student, and they were wonderful people, and
that's amazing.
Yeah, and again, it's been 70 years since the. Since Auschwitz and many of the other camps were freed. And
well, today is the anniversary of the Russian army freeing Auschwitz.
Right, exactly. And it's an important date for young people who don't know the stories and live in a world where everything seems to be about misinformation. It's a very sobering lesson to learn, and I urge anyone
We can't forget lessons from history like that. I mean, that's a tremendous lesson from history.
You're absolutely right. Hey, Mel, thank you very much for sharing that story. Let's go to Brad next in Florida. Wasn't Brad the guy that got into it with Legend a couple of weeks ago? Brad?
Mr. Feinbaum, yes, it is me. I've been missing. I hadn't followed this show too much, but I turned it on, I think, a couple of days ago, and it didn't take the East Coast. What do they call themselves? The East Side, the gangster.
East Coast.
East Coast. Where did he grow? Did he grow up on the mean?
OG.
Did he grow up on the mean streets of Wetumpka, Alabama?
I think so. Don't you sell me Tumker short. You get in trouble there making fun of the home folk.
I didn't know how many gangsters that they had from Alabama.
A lot of mobsters hang out in Alabama.
I did not know that. I didn't know that. Yeah, I heard him talking smack about Burton transferring what did he say? Georgia's a shooting star one time. This is what I want to ask him is how are we a shooting star program when out of the last, 6 years, we've been in the national championship or the SEC championship five times? How's that shooting star?
You're right. I've already spoken for one caller today, and now I'm catching all kinds of flack for being rude to Mitch and saying that his apology was not sincere. So I don't want to speak for I don't want to speak for legend. I mean, I'll get the OGs after me, the East Coast boys.
Yeah, the Black Hat crew. You don't want to get them started.
I don't need any East Coast gangsters coming after me.
Yeah. Well, this is what I want to say about Burton is, and some of the fans, I watched that show a couple of days ago. Some of the Georgia fans are much. You have to be an idiot not to say that Bryce Young is one of the best quarterbacks in college football. So if I was Burton, yeah, I'd go play for Alabama if given a shot. You got two receivers. But that don't mean nothing. You know, we'll tell legend, we'll spot you a receiver because evidently your receiving core is a little shallow. We expose that. So, yeah, we'll spot you, Burton. You can have him, and we'll see you next year in the national championship. We'll see who's shooting star and who's there again, and that's all I want to say other than go Dogs.
Okay, East Coast gangster out. We'll take a break. We have a lot to do on this Thursday afternoon. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, welcome back. John Talty will join us in a couple of minutes. We look forward to talking to him. Jim is up next in Florida. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Paul. Thanks so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Listen, what I was calling about was this. I'm temporarily living here in Gainesville, but my home is up in Toledo. And yesterday during your program, you were talking with an old newspaper colleague of yours from Connecticut.
Right.
And the name, and you guys remembered the name of Kirk Frank. Who was a colleague of yours?
The guy was calling. It was Mark. He was a former UPI reporter in Birmingham, and I had mentioned we had all worked together. Kurt Frank was with UPI and Joey Ledford, and we were all covering the Bryant retirement and resignation, retirement and death. And Kurt was one of my closest friends, and I thought he was a newspaper editor up in Ohio somewhere.
Yeah, well, he is. I'll give you his official title, Paul.
Okay.
He's president, general manager, and executive editor of the Toledo Blade newspaper.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, he's not in Dayton. He's not in Akron. He's in Toledo. And
Toledo.
I think he's been there maybe, I don't know, 10 years, something like that. So, yeah, the Blade newspaper, the parent company for the Blade newspaper in Toledo, Block Communication, also owns the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Frank, didn't have some influences on that newspaper over there, too.
That's interesting because Kurt, we're going back a long time, but we
mm-hmm.
were literally best friends in our 20s, and
mm-hmm.
he left Birmingham, and I kept up with him for a while, but it's been a
yeah.
lifetime that we have lost track. I knew he was an editor somewhere, but I'm really glad to hear that. That is he was an outstanding. He's from Ohio too, I think. So.
Okay, I was going to ask you that, whether he was a Southerner or
no,
a Northerner.
No, I'm trying to remember. He went to Bethany College
in West Virginia. Sure,
West Virginia. Yeah, so he may.
Yeah.
But I think he's from Ohio though.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, listen, I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Well, I am glad. I am going to call him Collect now that he's the president of the company. So I will call him tomorrow morning and see if he'll accept my charges.
Paulie, well, you guys ought to get together sometime.
No, I mean
better.
It's really remarkable. Since that call yesterday, I've heard some of my friends from back in the day, and we're talking 39 years ago. So we're going back a long way, but we were all inseparable. I mean, when you have no money and virtually and don't really know very many people, and you all just hang out together every day.
Was he a reporter like you?
He was. He worked for UPI. I think when he left here, he went to Florida somewhere, maybe Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen him in at least 30 years, but mm-hmm. he was an excellent reporter too.
Well, you know what you ought to do is maybe get him on your show.
You're right. One day we're just going to throw this open. If you have ever met me at some point in your life, we're going to bring everybody together. No, it's there aren't that many people that we're talking about here, but he would. I will definitely look him up. I appreciate you telling me where he is.
Okay. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you very much. Yeah. The
bye-bye.
President of the Toledo Blade. Toledo is near Michigan, I believe. Let's check out Billy, who is in the Midwest in Indiana. Hello, Billy.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I got a question for you. What do you think about LSU winning the national championship in basketball? Or do you think it's going to happen?
It could happen. They're certainly good enough. Whether they can be consistent enough is up in the air. But I would put them in a small group of SEC teams that are in contention. Thank you very, very much. John is up next in Virginia. Hello, John.
Hey.
Hey there, John.
Is this Paul?
It is, yes.
How come I don't see you on TV talking to me?
you will in about 6 seconds.
Oh, okay. Hey, I'm originally from Birmingham. I was born and raised there. But, until I joined the military, and that's how I wound up in Virginia. But my question is, I don't understand why we always have to play our first game in Atlanta.
Well, you don't have to always. And this year, you're not. But that is often a starting point because that game is it's a neutral site game, and Alabama likes to play games there. This year, of course, they played Miami. In fact, 2 or 3 years ago, Alabama opened the season in Dallas. So a couple of times they've opened the season in Dallas. Another time, I believe, they may have been in Florida. So it's not every year, but it's also convenient. So you put a game in Atlanta, and Alabama fans can drive over very quickly.
Yeah, but it's just as easy playing Alabama or the team you're playing against. That way they get all the money and Atlanta, Georgia don't get it.
Well, that is true, but It really depends on the season. In fact, this year I'm pretty sure the Alabama schedule is different because Alabama plays the second week of the year this year in Austin. So I'm checking right now. The first game will be in Tuscaloosa, so they will not start the season on the road.
Okay.
Utah State, yeah.
So that's that.
Tony is up next in Florida. Hey, Tony.
Well, good afternoon, Paul. How you doing today?
Tony, we're doing great. Thank you very much.
Good. I wanted to share a Bear Bryant story with you. I tried to get on yesterday, but thought I'd share one with you today.
Of course.
When I was first hired by a company in Birmingham, was hired by a man named Jim Bell, who we had skyboxes at Bryant-Denny.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew the coach pretty well, and we were over in Tuscaloosa going to a paper mill over there working. And he said, would you like to meet Bear Bryant? I said, sure, why not? So we went and was allowed onto the practice field. The guy that let us in said, hey, Mr. Bell, how you doing? So apparently they knew him. And he came down from the tower, and he shook Jim's hand, and he said, hello, Jim, how are you? And Jim said, this is my new rookie right here. And I was 27 years old at the time. And he shook my hand and said, looks like a fine young man in that gravelly voice. He had the hugest hands. I couldn't
he
believe
did. They were, Tony, they weren't hands. They were paws.
I mean, and they were huge. And he was just the nicest man. And he was bigger than life then. And I had something else I wanted to tell you. I got a take on this year coming up. And that is that, you know, in history, there's a saying, you know, does the man make history, the history make the man? Well, in the case of Alabama, I think the man made the team, Bryce Young. And in our case, as a Georgia fan, I think the team made our quarterback. So if you're looking forward to the rest of the year, I think that Bryce Young is probably going to have the best year he's ever had. I don't know that we can support Stetson Bennett as well as we have in the past. I mean, we're going to be around. We're going to be contenders, but I don't think we're going to be.
No, I think, Tony, just as Alabama slipped a little bit last year from the previous year, I think Georgia will follow the same suit. Thank you very much for the call. We are heading to a break. We will continue this conversation with more of your phone calls. John Talty from AL.com will join us as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back here on a Thursday afternoon. John Talty joining us, the senior sports editor from AL.com. He's got a book coming out later this year, this summer, in fact, on Nick Saban. John, I understand you are done with the book, at least sending it off to the publishers. I would think that's a feeling of relief for an editor and a writer like you.
Relief or dread, Paul? You know, I guess we'll see. it's been a fun journey, you know, putting the finishing touches on it. And, you know, hopefully it'll turn out in a way that people will be excited and enjoy the things that are in that book.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because it's been only two and a half weeks since we were together up in Indianapolis, and it seems like a lifetime for Alabama fans. You live down there, and I know you've had your head down trying to wrap up this manuscript, but how would you describe the current mood of the Alabama nation?
Well, I mean, following Legend's call here, you know, Legend seemed pretty fired up about it. He still feels pretty good, I guess. So, you know, I think it's probably a mix. There's probably some defiance. I think that I'm sure Alabama fans have been excited that, you know, since that game ended, and, you know, there was probably a brief moment of feeling bad. I know your show was wild in that first week afterwards. But, you know, for Alabama to since then add, you know, Jermaine Burton from Georgia, second year in a row that Alabama's gotten a wide receiver from the team that played in the national championship to jump ship and join its operation, I think has probably, you know, given people some excitement, something to look forward to. I think that Alabama is, of course, you know, going to be one of, if not the top team to beat this year. I think they're already, you know, many are going to project them to be, you know, number one or number two in the country. I think they're, in my opinion, the number one team in the country for this upcoming season. So I think that there's always going to be that period of grieving, of mourning, of wondering, you know, what went wrong. And I think it, you know, at Alabama, it turns fast that now people are starting to get excited about, you know, what's this upcoming season going to be like? What are the other pieces that Nick Saban's going to be able to pull out of the transfer portal to, you know, bolster what is already going to be a very talented team coming back in 2022?
And on that subject, there's been a lot of players that have come over. I don't think we really had a chance to talk about it. I think it's the running back from Georgia Tech that people are raving about. You've got the player from LSU. We talked about Burton. These are all critical positions for Nick Saban. And I'm curious, as those coaches are out there, how are they figuring out the nuances of the transfer portal?
I think it's like they're, you know, going shopping, basically. It's like you open up your fridge, you say, all right, I need two more things in order for me to make the meal that I'm going to make tonight. So then they go out and go shopping. And so if you look at, they've added three, you know, really key pieces so far out of the transfer portal, and all of them were significant needs. You know, they needed a running back who had some experience, so they go out and get one from Georgia Tech. You know, they needed a talented cornerback to fit in to, you know, what they have coming back. They go out and get one from LSU. And then, of course, you know, most recently, they really needed a talented veteran wide receiver to add to next year's roster after losing Jamison Williams and John Metchie. So they go out and get one. And so I think back to, again, you know, what Nick Saban has said from the beginning, that it's going to help Alabama a lot more than it's going to hurt it. And I think you've seen that in practice, in which, yes, Alabama has lost some talented players to the transfer portal, but more so than anything, they've added players that they've needed in key spots to, you know, maybe shore up some of the very minor weaknesses in the grand scheme of things that roster has.
I'm curious, John, your view of the other side, Kirby Smart and this program. We've all waited for that moment when they finally broke through and wondered what would happen on the other side. Somebody who has watched Kirby Smart during this ascent to number one, what do you think is going to happen now? And will things be different now that he's gotten the title conversation off his back?
Well, it certainly doesn't seem like the fans are satisfied, right, Paul? It seems like they've already kind of thought about, all right, we won, now what's next? Like, what other things are we going to get out of this? You know, it seems like the kind of the joy and afterglow of that national championship didn't last super long. You know, fans are thinking like, all right, we want to build a dynasty here now. So I think, you know, as I think I've talked about in your show in the past, Paul, one of the challenges is always once you actually have that success, once you finally get that, you know, you want to use analogy, that gorilla off your back, how do you maintain that level of intensity? How do you maintain that level of focus? And so that's going to be what Kirby is now going through is what Nick Saban has, you know, been through and been able to come across the other side and have success. You know, Kirby had, for the most part, a lot of staff continuity. He has now lost his defensive coordinator, Dan Lanning, who's gone to Oregon. He went from being able to tell his entire team, you know, we're knocking off Alabama, we're knocking off everybody this year, we're going to prove to people that we're the best, to now having to deal with everyone wanting to knock off Georgia. So it gets more difficult once you have success. It's going to be more challenging, I think, in many ways for Kirby to get back to that level. But he's recruiting at such a high level, and I think there's such buy-in from that fan base, from those boosters, from that school. I mean, they've invested so much money in terms of what he needs to be successful that I think he is going to have plenty of more success moving forward. It might not happen. He might not repeat as champions in 2022, but I think the way that he's recruiting shows that they're going to be a force for a while.
Flipping over to Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher's already won a championship at Florida State, but not at A&M, and we're hearing all the usual accolades that we usually hear for Alabama or Georgia about his recruiting class. He's had that one big year 2 years ago, or last year, I should say, and this year it seemed like it all fell flat. What are your thoughts on the future at A&M for Jimbo Fisher?
It's a really interesting past year, right, Paul? Because he becomes the first Nick Saban disciple to ever beat him, you know, in a game that I think surprised a lot of people when Texas A&M was able to beat Alabama on that last second field goal. So he has that as, you know, one of the real highlights of this past year. Of course, that recruiting class which some believe to be one of the best recruiting classes ever, is of course another highlight. But then you have some of those losses. You know, you had that two-game losing streak where it was just confusing. What's happening with this team? They lose defensive coordinator Mike Elko, who becomes Duke's head coach, extremely highly regarded, you know, well-respected guy who did a great job with that defense. So that's going to be one of the questions is, you know, are they able to maintain the level of defensive success they've had? I think that this year is interesting. I don't think that anybody, well, maybe A&M fans think this, but I think most people can see, all right, you might not have the big payoff in year one after you sign a top-rated recruiting class like that, but you're going to have to show something this year, and you're going to have to show something next year. And then maybe by, you know, year two or year three of this recruiting class, like, that's when you're expected to be competing to win it all. So I don't know if Texas A&M is the top competition for Alabama next year. Certainly Jimbo is recruiting at a high enough level where they should be competing for the SEC West, for the SEC overall. But, you know, there has to be some of that prove it. I don't think we've necessarily seen it from him yet at A&M. There's, again, been those high highs of beating Alabama and then some of the low lows of the losses. And so it was a confounding season in some ways. But I do understand the optimism moving forward based on some of the things that have happened in the last, you know, couple weeks.
It also seems that the win over this Jimbo over Saban doesn't seem as important now that Kirby Smart has beaten Saban for a title. It seems like every time I talk to you, I ask you about Auburn. Because Auburn always seems to be in the news and for the wrong reasons. Derek Mason leaves this week. Who knows what was going on down there? Other players seem to be fleeing to the transfer portal. One of these days I'll quit asking you about Brian Harsin, but right now, what is going on down there?
You know, from a 30,000-foot look, what I see happening is Brian Harsin doubling down on himself. You know, if you look, in essentially a year, a little more than a year, he loses both of the coordinators he hires on his first staff. You know, both of those guys are gone. He fires the wide receiver coach a couple games into the season who had Alabama State ties, and then, you know, recently lost defensive line coach who also had SEC recruiting ties. So he lost a lot of the guys that I felt like, if it, not necessarily forced on him, but he was certainly encouraged to hire people with SEC ties. And what he's done since then, again, to me, I think is doubling down on I'm going to bet on myself. He decides I'm going to be the offensive play caller next year. So that, of course, limits the offensive coordinator pool he has. Hires a guy who, you know, came highly recommended from Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, but still a young guy, offensive coordinator for the first time. And Harsin's going to call the plays. Feels very Gus Malzahn-esque, really. And on the defensive side of things, you know, Derek Mason, former Vanderbilt head coach, he leaves. And rather than doing a search trying to find a, you know, veteran SEC defensive coordinator, he promotes the guy who was his defensive coordinator at Boise State, a guy that he knows. So to me, it seems like for whatever reason that he decided to do it, he's saying, I'm going to go with what I know. I know I can call offensive plays, so I'm going to do that. I know this guy can call defensive plays because I saw him do it at Boise State with me. I'm going to have him do that. And if it works, then we'll all be championing him in a year that, you know, he bet on himself and he knew what he had to do. If it doesn't work, to me, it shows someone who didn't know how to adapt and grow and do the things he needed to in a challenging situation in the SEC.
Finally, John, the CFP, we had George Kliarkoff on this program the other day. I mean, he came out with a story that in many ways contradicts Jack Swarbrick, Bowlesby, and, of course, Greg Sankey on how everything went down. That on top of Phillips from the ACC slamming the door. What are you hearing? What's going on behind the scenes, and where are we as we march toward the end of this contract?
Well, I think you hit on it perfectly there, Paul. You know, there's a lot of different conflicting information. There's a lot of different competing interests. You know, it's something that we've seen for a long time now. I think we're finally seeing it play out more publicly now than maybe getting the leaks and source stuff that we're getting out of the room that we've had over probably the last year. You know, my friend Ross Dellinger at Sports Illustrated has probably done the best out of anybody at documenting all the different things happening behind the scenes. But it's something that for a while now, people that I talked to were very pessimistic about them being able to expand before the contract ran out. You know, you've seen some back and forth on it. You know, they impose these, you know, these self-imposed deadlines, they pass them, nothing happens, and they say, well, we still have more time. And so, you know, it's, I think we'll probably see some more of that. There'll be another meeting there'll be no resolution again, and, you know, we'll round and round we'll go. I mean, I think based on what Phillips has said, what some other people have said, I think it looks like it's more likely that it'll go to market in 2026. It just seems to be the way it's trending. But, you know, if, as I've said on your program in the past, if people are willing to, you know, actually come to the table and compromise on some things, maybe we'll get the result that a lot of people seem to want, that will be very popular with fans and will make everyone a lot of money. But to this point, you know, that hasn't been enough to get people to come to the table and come to an agreement.
John Talti with AL.com. Always great to hear from him. Thank you, John. We're heading to a break right now, and more of your phone calls when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Back, we are here, and let's check in with Batman in Kentucky. Hello, Batman.
Hey, Paul, how are you today?
We're doing great, thank you.
Buddy, I tell you what, big admirer of yours. Really like you. I think you've got the number one show in America right now. A lot of respect for you, sir.
Thank you.
I wanted to let you know, these people calling in giving you a hard time, you've got the support of the Mountain Mafia behind you, so don't let them scare you none.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
My thought wants to get your thoughts on Keon Brooks for Kentucky, playing time versus like Toppin and Hopkins.
That's a hard thing for me to quantify sitting here in the cheap seats. But, you know, I'd like to see where we are in a couple of weeks, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I just think with Toppin, there's so much potential there that Calipari's not tapped into yet, and I don't know if it's his willingness to want to compromise or if don't know what it is, but I think that boy's got a lot of talent.
The one thing that does make me nervous is I know he's won. I know he won the other day, but he is. It just seems like they're playing with fire every night, and that's a dangerous path for a team as he gets closer to the tournament. Hey, thank you very, very much for the call. Let's continue. Taylor in South Carolina. Hello, Taylor.
Hey, Paul. Big fan of the show, and a lot of big things are happening down here in Columbia with, you know, Beamer and everything. And
you got it.
I just wanted to hear your take on, what do you think Spencer Rattler and the Gamecocks will do in the fall? I mean, there's a lot of unknowns, a lot of new faces, but just want to hear your take.
Well, I think about what they did last year, literally going into the stands for quarterbacks, and now they have a guy who we know is capable of playing at an elite level. I think it makes a big difference, and I think it just really comes down to what how many more players they can get in the portal. They've already got the tight end or the wide receiver? I think it was a tight end from, or was it the wide receiver from Oklahoma to come along with Rattler. And I was just amazed, really, at how Shane Beamer was able to translate energy and things that sometimes don't matter, but it did matter because his players bought in, and they won the tweener games, and that's really critical. Jay is up next in Georgia. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
Look, I have a couple of questions. One, can you tell me what is Eric Gilbert?
I've heard some rumors right now. I can't tell you with a great deal of authority where he lands. I mean, this is a young man that, as we all know, has been a few places. Where he started, LSU, then Florida, then Georgia, or maybe I got the order wrong. But I've heard him connected to a couple of schools. I'm hesitant to land him yet.
Well, what's the latest you heard?
Well, I would prefer. That's a good question, by the way. I walked right into the door there. I'm reluctant just to throw a bunch of rumors out there because I cannot confirm them. But let me assure you, I've heard him connected to a couple of pretty prominent schools.
So the last I heard was he was enrolled at Georgia.
Well, but I've heard that. Let me say I've heard what you've heard, but I don't know that to be a fact. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. More to come in the next couple of hours. We hope you'll stick around.